Now, Australia has a space agency. Da, 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 da. But what does that really mean? Because Australia has actually been part of the space industry for quite some years. Can you give us a bit of background on that? How long has Australia actually been involved in space?
Right from the beginning.
Yeah, we were there at the beginning. We were on the UN Council for the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space, and that still meets every year. Australia didn't go for a while, but we're going again now.
We were the third country to launch our own satellite from our territory.
Yeah.
And then we've continued to be part of it, just sometimes more publicly, people like more visible sometimes.
Been a quiet achiever, haven't we?
Very much.
So why did we need a space agency?
Coordination.
Yeah. And having a single point of contact, having technical competence, having an authority, having a mandate, and finally getting rid of the duplication and triplication, quadruplications between 17 different departments and agencies that were using bits and pieces of satellite technology and applications, but not always talking to each other. And then, as I said, for the partnerships, being able to do these agency-to-agency agreements to give us secured access to satellite data without having to spend all the capital and risk ourselves and then contribute hardware to those missions. So the space agency, and I'm going to read these out so that I don't get them incorrect, but they did public consultations in every city, or you could make submissions online, so everybody was consulted. And as a result of that, plus industry research that that Naomi and some others did for Australia's space capabilities, they've come up with the priorities for Australia, which are excellent. And so we're looking at communication technologies, services and ground stations, space situational awareness, as we mentioned, position, navigation and timing. So this is, you know, all of your GPS and you know, automation technologies for agriculture and mining, etc. And the timing, as I said, you know, every time you use an ATM and you get the ping back of the time. Earth observation services, which is massive. Bushfire flood monitoring, assistance for different farms, all of that. Like, that's all out of Earth observation. Research and development, remote access management, and that also includes remote communications. I was FIFO mining for ages in the middle of nowhere in Central Australia, and as soon as we left site, it was, you know, radio and satellite. Well, not even radio. We went out of range of radio pretty quickly, but if I had to go and fix something in the bore fields that was 300 or 500 kilometres away, it was satellite phones only. So it was very essential for us when it was only myself and one other that were out, you know, on a 500-kilometre service call. So, and then just developing a strategy to position Australia as an international leader in specialised space capabilities, and that's exactly the niche that Naomi and Noah were mentioning before, and that's what we're working towards, and it's excellent, I think, as strategies.
So we don't think, in fact, it wouldn't be right for the Australian Space Agency to recreate NASA and try and build our own Saturn V and put our own Neil Armstrong on the moon, because the world has moved on.
The world's moved on, and that's actually one of the... We've very fortuitously, I don't think deliberately, but fortuitously created the agency at exactly the right time.
Yeah.
So one of the things that's happened is that, I think it was 2014, don't quote me on that one, it was the first time that commercial spending was more than government spending in the global space industry. So it's a little bit like, you know, aviation started as a government mail service and then became now an industry. People are employed, companies make money out of it. That's what's happening with the space industry. Now companies are providing launch services. Companies are providing data services. So the industry has matured, and even though there's a lot of things that government will always do, so for disaster response and things like that, we want our government still providing those services. But we want people... I want a job in the industry. We want companies who actually provide these services. So we now have a chance. The NASAs and the ESAs came from the government model and are now working out how to shift to a commercial model. Our agency has the chance to start with an industry model. And so when you listen to what they're saying, we're here to build an industry. We're here to support companies. We're here to encourage job growth.
So as we see in the US at the moment, NASA changing its approach and starting to engage with organisations like Boeing and SpaceX
We start with that.
Yeah,
we start with that, yes.
So that was a difficult, slow and painful change for them, but with us we're instantly enabling industry and finally going to be able to buy from Australian, because that's what hasn't been done is buy, like, I think we constantly buy American, to be blunt, anytime we need something with satellites, and we have the capability to produce a lot of the niche things in Australia, and finally being able to buy Australian and enabling those industries to grow and do the manufacturing, etc. here.
But we still need a government agency to talk to other government agencies.
Absolutely.
There is still obligations we have as a global citizen that have to be managed globally by governments. So we still need to manage, it's what's called spectrum, it's the airwaves. We still need to manage the debris and be responsible. So you still need a government entity to do that. It's the regulatory part, but we don't want it to squash the innovation.
Yeah.
I've just noticed behind us. Who thinks Australia has any satellites in orbit?
Well, you know too much.
But this is one of them. This was tested in our National Space Environmental Test Facilities 18 months ago, roughly. That's the Buccaneer satellite, and that's in orbit right now. So it's only little, but it's still ours.
We already play in this space, part of the pun.
Yep. We've actually got four of them.
So one of the things we talked about again upstairs was the fact that the Australian Space Agency is going to be spending some time working out which facilities we want to put in which states to kind of spread the benefit right across Australia, which I think is a very positive thing.
And what's there already?
To leverage what's there already. What sort of things do we see that we may not know this yet that Australia needs to build up in order to make that picture complete?
So a lot of it's the glue.
Yep.
It's the how do you, if you've got all the different states managing their own facilities, how do you bring that together to create a national capability? We don't necessarily want a launch facility in every state, so it doesn't make sense. How do you, where is the best location? How do you get the best use of that? This is the National Space Environmental Test Facility. How do you get people to use that? And do you have other facilities in the other states that feed into that? We've got things like the Square Kilometre Array in WA. You're not going to duplicate that somewhere else, but how do we leverage that? And one of the things that, so space is a complex system. It's ground stations, it's telescopes, it's manufacturing facilities, but then it's data processing. And so there's lots of different pieces. So all the states really should have innovation centres. And it's not siloed just in space. How can aviation benefit from that? How can mining benefit from that? One of the companies that's actually doing a huge amount in the space industry is Woodside, which is a mining company, an oil and gas company. So how do you connect all those dots?
So that's what is happening in the first 6 months. It started in July, and from July to December, the states are figuring out what goes where and how we don't duplicate abilities and how we best use the infrastructure that's already there and then really build it up. So sorting out that is the first 6 months. That's why the first hires, there's only about 20 people now, and they're more admin law, some on a loan from other government departments, just to really set up the paperwork and then help with the structure. And then you'll see it really come into full effect next year. So don't have too many expectations of super engineering stuff this year, but starting from next year when we know the locations and the distribution and purposes and things like that, that's what the first 6 months is for, setting it up.
So how do we prepare ourselves for this? Do we need to make changes to feed this beast that we're going to create, which is going to span right across Australia?
We're going to segue to this first. This is in Melbourne, and it's fantastic.
Do we need to change the way what we're teaching or how
So I think when you think about any industry, you need the skills and the people to feed that industry. You need to have, in the space industry, everything from engineers through to people who process data. But really what it is we need people who can solve problems. We need people who think innovatively and can work as a team, because no one person can do it all. It is impossible to do everything. You have to be able to work together. and you have to be able to work internationally as well. And this is when we start talking about what we do well. Australia is actually very good at training and education. We have, whether it's the higher education and research or secondary education, we actually have some real gems. And this is what we're going to need. This program was just as much about building expertise for the mining industry as it is about building expertise for the space industry. These are just science, technology, engineering, mathematics skills that we need for our future workforce.
And this is integrated into the VCE curriculum as well for all of the school students, so they can do this fully as part of several programs, even language programs and other programs as well. Any school in Victoria can participate in this.
Yeah.
Yep.
If you guys look back now from the positions that you hold now and kind of roll the clock back to when you were at school, through school and college.
Big kids can do it too, by the way. That's me and Karen, who's sitting over there. She's one of the volunteers tonight. So,
what could have helped at that point? What could have been done differently, which would have helped you in your career as you see it now?
Well, I think I declared when I was in about year 7 or 8, I hate science. I'm never, the second I can give it up, I'm out of there. And that didn't work very well because it wasn't relevant. I think that's what we're doing better. Actually, as students come through, it's got to be relevant. When I have to go on training, I choose to do it because it's relevant to my job or what I want to do in the future. So I think that relevance is really important.
Certainly that's something that I came across. I'm an amateur astronomer, but I also try and educate kids and novice astronomers in really enjoying getting the most out of their astronomy.
They blow you away
and
when they're motivated.
If we could set them up with projects which were easy to get started and they could get an extraordinary result from, which we've done, if you have a look at back at AstroScience, you'll see some of the results of that. It gave them the passion to go back and do the rest of the study that they really needed to fill the gaps that were left in terms of the physics, the mathematics, the rest of the science that these projects had to eject in order to make them simple enough for the kids or novice astronomers to run.
I don't think I concerned myself with the reality too much when I was studying. I was a big fan of Star Trek Voyager, and I saw B'Elanna Torres as a chief engineer, and I was like, cool, I'm going to do that, so I need to become an engineer, and I didn't really think about what I could actually do in it, but until the space station started being built, and then I was like, yes, that's like Starfleet, I'm going to work on that. So there wasn't really real-world applications to my stuff. I was just like, I want to be like chief engineer B'Elanna Torres.
It does feel a little bit like Star Trek's only just around the corner, isn't it? Because we're talking about colonisation of other planets. We're talking about all this kind of technology that Star Trek had. And
definitely the collaborative side of ISS
Right. We can teleport, but only photons.
But I think that very fine line between science fiction and science fact, when we're motivated, when our imagination... When we go, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could do this? That's the motivation to work out how to solve that problem. Yeah. The rest is just pulling all those skills you've got and applying it to that problem. So that's the motivation piece.
Yeah.